Okay. Are you there, David?
Yes, and you are too. I can see you on the thing. Thanks, Leroy. We did restart it and it worked.
Good. Good. There's, Yahweh is giving us feedback through Leroy. Thank you, Leroy. Okay, well, we were busy prattling about Sicilians, and when we realized that my voice couldn't be heard on Eurofolk Radio, so we were just having a good bit of fun at the expense of the Sicilians. I finally figured out the lyrics to that song. We hate the Sicilians.
Yes. Don't join me. The Italians will hate you next. But let's review what we were talking about. What we were talking about is Pastor Gale was just on, and he was talking about the Ishmaelites being born to
Hagar.
Hagar, which was a bond woman. She wasn't a free woman. And we had said that that we were born of Sarah, who was a free woman. And we were talking about the irony that we're slaves in our country at this point, in our countries, and we were born to the free woman. But we were saying also that the Arabs seem to have been mixed completely. The Ishmaelites seem to mostly be mixed completely out of, out of existence. One thing he talks about is the fact that Iran are our brothers. Now, I had said before that the Jews want to go to war with Iran because Iran helped us get over the Caucasus Mountains. Okay. And the Jews will not forgive or forget that they want to get revenge on somebody like that. Also, he said the Iranians have no use for the Jews. You notice how we never...
I made the mistake of calling an Iranian an Arab one day, and he got very offended.
Well, doesn't Arab mean mixed in the same way as Mexico means mixed?
Yeah, mestizo and Arab. Arab means to become dark, and it's very true. The Ishmaelites were the kinsmen of the Hebrews.
Yeah,
in the Middle East, they were the desert people. Okay. And they were originally white. It wasn't until, in fact, they were white for the longest time until Islam appeared, because those people, those Ishmaelites, did not practice slavery, as far as I know, until Islam appeared. And once Islam appeared, then they started taking black slaves and slaves from Europe and from everywhere, really, India, China, and started mixing with those people, and that's how the Ishmaelites became Arabs.
And who do you think might be responsible for that? Who might have encouraged that?
Well, Muhammad had a Jewish wife and several rabbinical teachers who he was a student of. So that would explain that.
Well, now you just said Arab means dark and Mexico means mixed, right? So we see the Jews have mixed with all those people. So we're not just picking on the Sicilians. As a matter of fact, we're not picking on the Italians. We're talking about the ones from the island. And of course, we're not saying that
Palestinian Jews. That's the Sicilians. Yes.
Yeah. And we're not saying that every single Sicilian is a race mix. I can't say whether or not that's true, but we can say that the ones that have come here are cold-blooded killers, and we can tell where they came from and who's in their bloodline. We can certainly tell that very easily by the way they live and so on and die.
But and you Giuseppe know,
yeah, go
was
ahead.
The one who organized the mafia.
Right.
Okay. They were there already, but he coordinated them under the Illuminati. And I think you pointed out Mazzini means Mason.
Yes, and they did this through the P2 Lodge. Those people were taken out of the ghettos. Hello?
Mm-hmm.
The ghettos of Sicily? Who do you think might be living in the ghettos? I'm not talking about the rich Jews in Sicily or the so-called Italians. But, you know, the Jews have always lived in ghettos. They keep the smaller Jews in the ghettos. Now, once they were let out in France, you know that then the high ones took all these, took bigger buildings and so on and so forth. But there was always an element that's been kept in the ghetto, the Warsaw ghetto, whatever ghetto you're talking about, because they don't want these people to assimilate.
That's right. That's right. They have to keep a cadre of self-hating Jews, or I should say self-worshipping Jews, in ghettos around the world, because they need these as shock troops for sacrificial pawns for the next engagement, for the next world war, and to keep the claim of Jewish persecution alive and well. Okay, so it's actually throughout history, it's actually been the Rothschilds and other Jewish bankers who have sacrificed these little Jewish communities and used them for their propaganda, the persecution propaganda. Okay, that is how the Jews have operated vis-a-vis the European nation states. They've tried to do it in other, you know, like with the Arabs and with the Muslims. But most of the time, those people don't buy it, and they keep the Jews under control. They don't allow the Jews to become bankers, or don't allow them to go high up in the government as they have in white nations, white Christian nations. Okay, that's the difference.
But guess what? People might be saying to yourselves out there, well, why wouldn't they want them to assimilate? Well, I'll tell you why. You see, if they assimilate, they lose their soldiers. If they assimilate, they lose their support down the bottom of the lodge, so to speak. You get what I'm saying? It's the same thing as being at the bottom of the lodge. Those people, or the bottom of the mafia, those people are the ones that support the people at the top, okay? So one thing you said that's very interesting, now let's connect some dots here. You know Mexico means mixed, and you know that Arab means dark, or whatever it means like that. Well, the reason that got me into the investigation on the Italians was because of the Dago. And the Dago means a darker Italian. You know the ones that have the kinky hair that looks like a half Negro hair and half white hair? You know what I'm saying? And they grease it back. They called them grease balls. But, Archie Bunker said it. I always say this, but, I mean, I saw the Dago throwing the dough in the window. You know what I mean? And so I went and asked Italians. I asked them all. I said, what is a Dago? And they wouldn't answer the question. None of them answered the question. I just happened to come across it eventually. That's all.
Yes, yeah. And we talked a couple of times, did a show about the Young Turks, which also Mazzini was involved in. And the Jews, the organized Jewry, has gone around the world organizing various quote-unquote young this and young that. From this morning's article about Palmerston, who was the Rothschild leading light in organizing communist revolutions on the continent. Mazzini started Young Italy. He started, where's the list here? Oh, yeah, Young France, Young Germany, Young Italy, okay, and even Young America. But where did this guy Mazzini get the traveling money to go all around the world starting these left-wing communist revolutionary groups? Where did he get the money?
Couldn't have been through people he associated with the P2 Lodge, could it?
Couldn't have been from the Rothschilds, could it?
But let me tell you. Oh, go ahead.
Okay, just two more. In 1852, he came to America, and it was the Young America was the radical wing of the Democratic Party. And then in the future, they created the Young Turks, which we talked about, which were really Jews masquerading as Turks. And these young Turks, quote unquote, were the ones responsible for the Armenian genocide. And then Palmerston Mazzini also created a group called Young Israel, now known as B'nai B'rith.
Ah, very interesting. They're not so young anymore. But guess what? No. Let me connect a couple dots for you. And this is, you might find this hard to be true, but it is the truth. And I recorded this mafia movie, and I put it on our EFR, and it's called How It Came to Be, the Mafia, okay. Cosa Nostra, whatever. Guess what they called themselves? The Young Turks. The mafia. I'm serious. I'm dead serious. In the movie, you'll hear it, or if you listen to the thing, they called themselves the Young Turks. And another thing that you can tell that Freemasonry is involved here is the Order of the Black Hand was involved in the Young Turks up in Turkey. All right. Where they wanted the land of Palestine. You remember we read that on the show before, right?
Right.
Yeah. Well,
Freemason.
Yes. If you listen to this mafia movie, in it, they use the Order of the Black Hand here in America.
Okay.
And I believe in Sicily as well. I let me mention this one more time too, because this is great. They said in that movie that the mafia needed democracy to be the form of government because it gave them the freedoms they needed. I just love that. That's all I can tell you. So,
well, just like the communists in the 1950s, reading the Fifth Amendment, okay, dragged it in front of a Committee on Un-American Activities, and Jew after Jew after Jew after Jew pled the Fifth because they could get away with it here in America. But Jew-controlled Bolshevik Russia, they simply executed you without a trial.
Yes, they had the first anti-Semitic law. Well, I don't use that term. Let's use it, the anti-Jew. If you said anything against Jews, you could be put to death, correct?
Right, yeah, exactly.
So now they're trying to institute that. They've instituted these kinds of things over in Europe, and now they're trying to institute it here in America. And this is all going to, I'm serious, that even though they've covered so much ground, it's all beginning to backfire in their face. It will not be long, ladies and gentlemen, until you see these Jews running to Palestine from America. Go ahead.
Yeah. As you're speaking, I'm reminded of a pyramid scheme. You know, the people at the top are the ones that make all the money and make all the decisions, and the people on the lower rung of the pyramid are the guys that have to do all the work, and they take all the risks, you know, and they have to knock on the doors to sell their wares, and then the guy on the next level gets a percentage of what they sell, and the guy above that gets a percentage of both guys' sales. But at the top, nobody does any selling. They just take a cut.
That's the insurance business.
Yeah, that too.
Yeah.
So it's a pyramid scheme. Well, you can't expand the pyramid scheme without the people at the bottom taking all the risks, getting tired of that. Okay? And the pyramid has reached its final level. It's not going to get any bigger, and people are becoming Jew savvy.
But what does that tell you again? Everything to do with the Jew is the same spiritually as it is physically. In other words, the people at the top, it's just like the government. They're the invisible, and the people down the bottom are the visible. So anything happens to the organization, the people down the bottom take the hit. Well, that's how it is in Freemasonry. You've got the people at the bottom that you know, they love to tell you they don't know anything, but they're doing all the dirty work. And then the people at the top are the invisible. They're the Jews of the lodge. There's a few Jews in the lodge that will be visible because they do business deals in the lodge. Okay?
Right.
So, but, you know, the same thing is anything the Jews have to do with. It's called the externalization of the hierarchy. They're getting bold now, and they're coming out, but they've always stood in the background as the invisible. In Freemasonry or in the democracy scheme, the politicians are the ones that take all the heat. And the Federal Reserve and Jews, they're the visible, and the invisible is the Federal Reserve. The country doesn't even know that the government is run by the Federal Reserve. They don't know that the IRS is a private corporation, just like the Federal Reserve is a private corporation, and that the IRS is the police arm of the Federal Reserve.
Sure. tax collector for the Jewish banksters. That's all it is.
Yes.
Right? Everybody assumes it's a government entity. No, it's not. Both the Federal Reserve and IRS are private corporations run on behalf of the Rothschild banking family. That's all there is to it. Okay. Yeah, so our purpose today was to do a tribute to Ernst Zundel, but we got sidetracked on this issue because I've been doing shows on the Young Turks, Young Italy, and their connection to the Civil War in America, the same, how should I put it, cadre of schemers, Giuseppe Mazzini, John Slidell, Judah P. Benjamin, Lord Palmerston, the Rothschilds, B'nai B'rith, the Young America movement, which was Mazzini's institute here in America to bring about the radical abolitionists and agitate for the Civil War. Every time you look at a revolution or a war, you see there's a Jew pulling the strings behind the scenes, making sure that many, many more white people die in that war than is necessary, okay? And the war wouldn't even started without Jewish intrigue in the first place, okay? And Ernst Zindel was one of the few people who called the Jews out on the Holocaust and said, no, there's no proof. There was never any proof that a Holocaust happened. It's all one big Jewish lie, okay? And then you mentioned, well, the average Christian should know because the Bible says beware of Jewish fables.
Right. Right? It says it in 1 Timothy and it says it in Titus. So in other words, most Judeo-Christians should know this. They've definitely read this if they've read their – see, they don't read the Old Testament. So if they've read the New Testament, we should reiterate this. And that's exactly – it says beware of the fables of the Jews. And what I had said is the biggest fable of the Jews – is that Yahweh or Jesus Christ is a Jew. The second biggest fable of the Jews is that the Jews are God's chosen people. And the third biggest fable of the Jews is this Holocaust fable. And I was saying that, you know, it's a shame that they've got this much traction out of it, but things are starting to turn on them now. By the way, I'm glad I thought of this. We're going to be talking about Ernst Zindel, but David Irving's books... in a UK, I believe it was a UK university, the Jews were trying to force them to take those out of the university where they can be seen and put them in a place where they can't be seen, and also to mark them as, you know, I don't, you know, like material that is not shouldn't be read or something. You know what I mean? It's like it's not good that you read this material because it's anti-Holocaust. It's anti-Jew. All right. So one university said no way. Yeah, one university said no way. We're not going to do that. So see, this is what needs to happen. I've noticed a trend worldwide, and you think about this. This is something that is very healthy to do. You're going to see people getting fired or getting reprimanded for saying things against the Jews. The more that goes on, right? A guy just said Sieg Heil in one of his tweets or something, right? And he got in trouble for it. But you see, the more of that goes on, the more that exposes, hey, so what he said, Sieg Heil? Who cares? You know what I mean? Yeah. So the more people that keep getting reprimanded, this looks like, you know, they're trying to teach us a lesson. See what happens when you speak against the Jews? You get fired. But sooner or later, this is going to have a tipping point, and it's going to tip the other way until it's going to be so common for somebody to say, ah, it's the Jews again, you know, in their tweets and everything, that it's, you know, right now we've got the ADL, in case you don't know this. We've got the ADL has been asked to participate on YouTube to take it down. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Censor anti-Jewish posts. Well, they've been doing that to us. YouTube has cited your folk radio a couple of times now because we do not censor ourselves on the Jewish question. Okay. Yep. So they're risking the whole world doing the same thing because it's just a question of time before people simply get fed up with being censored.
And they'll read David Irving's works just because, oh, you don't want me to read that? Then, of course, I think I should read it. Whatever the Jew says that I shouldn't be doing, you see, okay, let me bring it full circle. Why does he want to start young movements? Why do they want to start youth movements in all these different countries? Why did Mazzini want to do that? Well, see, the youth are prone to rebellion. The youth are prone to enact and do something foolish because they're younger. So they might go out and do a demonstration and take a big risk where an older man is wiser and he's more cautious as well. So they take advantage of the youth. Saul Alinsky talked about this very same thing. And that's what these young movements are for. That's why they've got these idiot leftists out in the street right now. That's another one of their young movements. And yes, exactly. The Freemasons are involved in that. I promise you they're there out in the street smashing that stuff up as well. And not just them, but communists, Satanists, you know, queers, all kinds of things. You know, absolutely. Anybody that's against us is part of that movement. And so they're going to use them. But you see, they're making fools out of themselves. You know what I mean? And they're making it obvious that the right isn't the problem in the sense. It's the right that handles themselves pretty well. It's showing that the left is the one that's out of control.
Amen.
Okay. Yeah. And that's important to show.
Proof. So the rhetoric. Same thing is the problem behind all, you know, all uprisings is absolutely false. You know, what happened in Germany and Italy was a reaction to Jewish crimes against white Europeans. Okay? In fact, there was very little violence by either the German people or the Italian people against Jews, even though the Jews richly deserved it. Okay? The yellow armband, for example, that the Jews wore in Germany, that was provided by the Zionists. It was a badge of honor for Jews. It wasn't a punitive thing by the Germans. So the Zionists admit that was their idea, okay? But today they say, oh, those evil Germans made the Jews wear these yellow. No, it was the Zionists that told them to wear those yellow armbands, okay? Well, so this is the type of propaganda that the social justice weirdos have been fed. And they simply don't know any better, but nevertheless, they're a very violent left-wing group, as left-wing has always been violent. All of the revolutions that disrupt society has always been by left-wingers and Jews, always, and without any exception.
Yeah, they're the ones that usually that mostly shed the blood, yes.
That's right. That's right. Yet, it's always the right-wing that gets the bad press. Right. Well, because the left,
you got it. The left owns it. But when you look at this, this is what you look at the world right now. And you know that they've talked about never let a good crisis go to waste. You've heard that out of their mouths. You've heard that Ordo Ab Caio. I will mention this one more time. Then we'll go to Ernst. Okay. Ordo Ab Caio means order out of chaos. When Yahweh created this, you know, and brought this planet into order again, it was in chaos. And even Pike's book said that what chaos is really defined as is there was no order, you know, before. It was void. Remember, it was void, and it was, you know what I'm saying? So Yahweh took that, and this is the truth, because order out of chaos comes from Yahweh. It doesn't come from the Masons. It's just another one of their imitations. But so Yahweh brought the universe into an order. And that's the order that it was in. Now, what they're doing is they're taking it. That's what I said was I had a show called Corruption Creates Chaos. Corruption, you know, breeds chaos. What they're doing is what he said in his third letter to Mazzini, whether you want to call that a hoax or not, it is what has happened and it is what is happening. He said, we're going to release the nihilists and the atheists. And he talked about the Christian and Muslim war. That alone will be enough chaos, right? They brought them to our nation. They armed them. They disarmed us. That'll be big, big time chaos. But then on top of that, they realize, you know, the nihilists and the atheists would be people like queers.
Right.
People like, you know, transgenders, people like Freemasons, people like, you know, the Satanists. Yeah, the Satanists. So so what you're seeing is that's the chaos. See, when you have chaos, you don't have order. I mean, I'm just saying, when you're smashing out building windows, and what's funny is this, they're smashing out Starbucks coffee windows, and that's one of their biggest allies, and I love that. Right. But I mean, you know, they're out there smashing cars and police cars. That's chaos. That's out of order.
Right.
And so what these Masons believe they're going to do is create so much chaos. It's the Hegelian dialectic again. This one is called problem reaction solution this time. You know,
right?
Again, the solution is to bring order. a new world order. So what we do is we create as much chaos as we possibly can until the world begs us to bring it back into order.
Bro, that's assuming that the order can be recreated.
But it can't be.
No, it can't be. It won't, because it's the Humpty Dumpty factory. You know, all the king's horses and all the king's men couldn't put Humpty Dumpty back together again. Why? Because there was so much chaos, there's no way you can rebuild it.
Yeah, but you know what? Why there's so much chaos? And I talked about this in my show. It's because there's so many hybrids at this point that they have mental problems. And they have spiritual problems. And they have physical problems. And you can't just bring that back out of chaos. You can't bring those bodies out of chaos. The only way you can get it out of chaos is to kill it.
That's right.
You see, that's the problem, is there's too many hybrids across the planet right now. There's too many. You've got feral Negroes. You've got all kinds of mixed Negroes, and those are bigger problems than the regular Negroes, and on it goes. Right. That's what the problem is. That's why. See, they don't realize the chaos that they've created. There's only one way to bring that to order, and that is to kill it.
That's right. That's right. So that whole procedure of making order out of chaos presumes that the chaos will end at a point where you can rebuild society with Freemasons and, of course, Jews in total control, and they have a working society of people who actually do their jobs right. But no, because what they're finding is they have to corrupt everything, including the churches, including the office personnel, and et cetera, et cetera. And if you create that much chaos, then you've lost everything. And you don't have the builder race, namely the white race, to start from scratch. We will rebuild from scratch.
But what's funny
there
about
won't be any Jews or Freemasons left?
Yeah, what's funny about that is you couldn't. They're so stupid, these Jews, that they couldn't. They don't realize that they're hybrids, and that you couldn't bring order to hybrids.
Right.
You see what I'm saying? In other words, they will always be the chaos. They are the authors of they are the chaos. They are the they have to corrupt. Remember what you know, how they're born twice dead? I mean, they're born spiritually dead from the womb, and that their whole thing is to corrupt man utterly. Remember from Peter, 2 Peter. Well, you can't bring a world to order with those people. Because they are the corruption, they're the source of the corruption, and their father is the source of the corruption. So therefore, if you have a world like this, let me explain to you what kind of an order they can bring forth. Hell. Yeah. That's what. Because hell is do what thou wilt shall be the whole of the law. If everybody on the planet right now does what thou, you know, do what thou wilt shall be the whole of the law, that is hell. Yeah. That is complete chaos. That is hell, and that's what hell will be like. See, we don't have the Father. We're separated from the Father, even though we have communication with Him, and that makes it hell to be here without Him. And if we're without communication with Him, that is pure hell.
Right, and plus the fact that there are parasites, and a parasite cannot live without the host. And what happened in Bolshevik Russia was the host was throwing off the parasite, okay? So the Jew is always discovered. You know, they have to hide in the background, but the Russian people, despite the fact that the Bolshevik Jews had absolute dictatorial control, totalitarianism of Bolshevik Russia, it still didn't work, because you have to have freedom-loving white people to do their jobs with joy and pleasure, Arbeit macht frei. But if you're working as a slave for a Jew Bolshevik boss, you don't want to do your job.
And what must else you have? See, communism doesn't work. You must have democracy. That's right. That's how you would slave whitey. You must have democracy as your form of government. Sooner or later, Sooner or later, I can't wait until the world finds out that democracy's not for white people. I mean, I'm trying to get the message out there, but obviously my audience isn't big enough to get it out there. I've seen some people talk about it, but I still see these news clips with people on YouTube, and they're like, they're trying to tear down our beloved democracy here in Sweden. Your democracy is what killed you in the first place, fella.
That's right. Mm-hmm. Democracy is a hybrid between Bolshevism and republicanism.
Or capitalism and communism. Or communism and Christianity. You can't do that. You can't have dark with light.
Literally, don't work.
And so this chaos they've created can't be brought out of chaos by anybody but Yahweh himself.
Amen. Amen. Or the white race, if we're allowed to live without Jews. In a world without Jews.
That's going to be beautiful. Okay, what we were talking about, just to give a preface real quick about Ernst Zundel, was you talked about the fact that they attacked him and everything, and the only thing I added to that was the reason why they went after him was, number one, he was German, and they hate Germans. All Germans must perish, according to the Jews. And number two, he was much more credible as a German speaking on this issue, whereas I don't think you can find many Germans on the planet. You'll find more today than yesterday, Germans don't talk against the Jews. That's a real known, that's been brainwashed inside of them so hard into them and hardwired into them that they would defend the Jew. They would never speak against the Jew.
Because they believe Hitler holocausted 6 million Jews, and they all share in the blame. This is how they've been brainwashed, okay? And Ernst Zundel will say, nope, that's all a lie. Sorry, that's all one big lie, right?
Right.
So this is from Rehmatt's World, R-E-H-A-M-A-T, apostrophe S, Rehmatt's World, Remembering Ernst Zundel, posted on August 8th. German-Canadian writer, author, human rights activist, and a German patriot, Ernst Zundel, died on August 5th in Germany. Dr. Ingrid R. Zundel, a U.S. citizen, said that her husband died on Saturday at his home in the Black Forest in Germany, where he was born in 1939. Ernst lived in Canada for decades. In 1984, a wealthy Israel-Canada dual citizen, Sabina Citron, meaning a Jewess, founder president of Canadian Holocaust Remembrance Association. How can you remember something that never happened? Took Ernst Zundel to court for inciting hatred toward Jews on the basis of two documents. The West War and Islam, and Did 6 Million Really Die? I never read The West War and Islam, but I did read and he didn't write either of those. He just promoted those, okay? At the conclusion of a vicious 7-week propaganda trial, just like Nuremberg.
Yes. Show trial, we can call it.
Show trial, yes. The court pronounced Zundel innocent. There's a lot of typos here.
I see.
The court pronounced Zundel innocent of inciting hatred toward Jews in his 4-page pamphlet, The West War and Islam, but was pronounced guilty of publishing, not writing, the anti-Holocaust book. Okay, so all he did was circulate this pamphlet. Did 6 million really die? In 1992, Canada's Supreme Court acquitted Zundel on the ground that the law under which Zundel had been charged was unconstitutional. Even in Canada, it was considered unconstitutional, even though they don't have a freedom of speech law. But he didn't write it. He just promoted it. So, can you imprison somebody for posting a story you don't like in the mail?
Well, look at it this way. You see, this man is a martyr. All right, he may not know about Christian identity or this or that, but he gave his life not only for his German brothers, but all his white brothers all over the world. What happened with this case, you see, was it exposed something. It exposed the fact that you can bring truth into a court of law, and the truth is of no value in the court of law, which now, that's the whole purpose of a court, is truth. You know, truth and mercy, right?
I was talking
about being a judge. Those balances have to do with truth and mercy. You know, you look at the situation, you can't, the truth is the hard line thing where Yahweh will judge us, but he has mercy. So he looks at your situation and then he comes with a judgment for that, using that balance. Okay. We see that these courts do not even have truth. They don't allow truth. Truth is not a defense. And we also found that there is no mercy in this court as well, which tells you it exposed the courts. So in other words, this man is a martyr in a sense where he gave his life to expose the fact of what these courts really are. And that's a very valuable thing. You see, they got him to go away for 7 years and all this. That, you know, that's Yahweh's number of completeness or whatever, right? But you think about it. He gave his life and it exposed the truth about the courts. And that's what's the most important thing, I think. What do you think about that?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, the one judge was the Canadian Human Rights Commission that said, quote unquote, truth is no defense. Okay? Then what are courts for? What are trials for if the truth cannot be put into evidence? Okay? Ernst Zindel's famous defense attorney, Doug Christie, labels the Holocaust a modern religion. And the human rights industry, the Inquisition of modern times to silence religious heretics.
It's a religion where you hold out the plate and you force people to put money in the plate, though. It's kind of an interesting, you know what I mean? Usually you hold out the, you know, you pass around the plate and people willingly put something in. But the Holocaust religion, if you want to call it religion, I can see that. This is the kind of plate where you go to a country and you say, you're going to put stuff in that.
Right. It's extortion.
Yes. Yeah. That shows, and what does that expose? That exposes that what we have been saying, that Judaism is not a religion at all. It's a worldwide criminal cartel, and criminal cartels extort money from people.
That's right.
Not only do they do it through the government and the IRS to the American people and all the other peoples of the world, but they do it in this kind of form as well. They do it in several ways. The extortion, when you're putting a direct tax on the people, you're extorting from the people. When you're forcing the people to do these things that they shouldn't have to do, that they've set, you know, in other words, these Jews don't belong in our nation. We've set the laws, our founding fathers set the laws and the constitution for this land. Then these Jews come in and abuse, you know, they come in crying tears when we let them in. And then a short while after that, they're trying to change our culture, our constitution. They're trying to extort money from us. They've even extorted through this Holocaust thing. They said we didn't get them out of the concentration camps enough, so they came to America and got reparations as well.
Right, yeah. There's no end to Holocaust stories that have been created after the so-called fact, after World War II, when it never happened. Okay? The story continues. After spending some years in Canadian and American jails, Zindel was extradited to Germany, where questioning the 6 million story is a serious crime. It's illegal. And not just in Germany. Most countries around the world, it's illegal to question the hoax.
Oh, it's 5 years, not 7? I thought it was 7 years. I'm sorry.
Yeah, well, that's what this says here. Okay, so he was jailed for 5 years. Jewish historian, but he spent over 2 years in jail in Canada.
Okay, you know, so it was 7 then. Okay.
Yeah, okay. Jewish historian and Auschwitz inmate Joseph Berg testified at the Zindel trial claiming there were no gas chambers. He was disowned by the organized Jewry. When Berg died in 2009, Zindel paid for his burial at a Catholic cemetery as no Jewish site would take him. Right? So he must have been a self-hating Jew who loved truth more than the rabbis or Zionism or the Holocaust industry. Okay. On May 7, 1995, Ernst Zindel's Toronto home was set on fire, resulting in $400,000 damages. Zindel escaped as he was on a speaking tour. According to Jewish-owned newspaper, the Toronto Sun, the fire was set by members of the Jewish Defense League, which was designated as a terrorist organization by the FBI in 2000. However, it still operates in Canada and France, and still operates in America, too.
Yeah, it sure does. Now, you know, the JDL, you know, I had said that the JDL were responsible, because I learned that from Bill Cooper, for the first terrorist acts on American soil. But I actually think the mafia might be the first terrorist acts on American soil.
Yeah, the mafia is Jewish terrorists. That's what the mafia is.
Yeah, same right? thing. But I mean, it's not the Jewish Defense League. I'm not sure. He didn't say what year the Jewish Defense. I need to look into that subject. The first terrorist acts on American soil. You know, but there they are again. The Jewish Defense. Now, how do they not do the ADL as the and the Southern Poverty Law Center is the same exact thing? You're telling me this FBI doesn't know that the ADL has been guilty of stealing police records. All kinds of things, all kinds of filthy acts.
First, they know, but no FBI official would be willing to say that publicly, right? He would lose his job in a heartbeat. Okay, so and then a week later, JDL leader Irv Rubin was caught trying to enter Zindel's property. By the way, Irv Rubin was eventually convicted of some kind of terrorist charge. And he was done to death in prison.
Good.
Yeah.
Praise Yahweh. Yeah.
And beat the crap out of him until he died. Ernst Zindel was a former member of Canada's ruling Liberal Party. He was. Interesting. I didn't know that. Professor George J. Michael, Westfield State University in Massachusetts, a Zionist expert on white supremacist movements and a militant Islam, has claimed Ernst Zindel was a, quote, neo-Nazi white supremacist and an early figurehead in the fringe field of historical revisionism. Okay, well, revisionism is not a fringe field. No Jew has ever been able to rebut a single revisionist article or book.
No, and they wouldn't touch it with a 10-foot pole. But let me show you something, you see. Mr. Zundel, he did something that is just not allowed. He was the former member of Canada's ruling Liberal Party. See, then when he found out the truth, he began to speak the truth. That means now the Liberal ruling party, he's no longer part of the Liberal ruling party. Now he's an enemy of that whole party. So that means he's a neo-Nazi. But why couldn't we call him a neo-con?
Right?
Because, you know, I'm just saying that that's his major sin right there, and that's why they had to go after him in that way. That's one of his sins, you see. He was a liberal. Can you believe it? Yahweh turned him around from being a liberal who was probably brainwashed like the other German people, and he found the truth. Yahweh let him find the truth.
Amen. Amen. So we see that, you know, we have this whole situation of Holocaustianity or Shoahism, because that's the Jewish term for the Holocaust is Shoah. And it indeed has become a religion, and you cannot question the religion. However, the Jews insist that it's all fact, and they will prosecute you if you question their religion by using facts against it, right? I'm going to go to tomatobubble.com.
You're not going to finish that, the Michael Hoffman? Yeah.
Oh, there was just one quote. Yeah. Not a quote Hoffman. Go ahead.
It doesn't really. I don't really listen to him. Them. You know, Michael Hoffman, a Christian scholar of the Jewish Talmud, wrote on August 7th, "In America, the Yahoos are stirred to outrage by the specter of Islamic Sharia law coming to Mayberry. While they are still oblivious to the Talmudic law, that's true, and psychology, which suffices." The USA. Talmudic Halacha is a two-tiered legal system. Hello. Hello. Two-tiered legal system? A two-tiered, Burger King and McDonald's, Coke and Pepsi, the Democrats and the Republicans, the Nazis and the liberals, blah, 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 blah. Yeah. So another two-tiered. They always have their two things, the dualistic. You know, so that so that they always can run both tiers. The two-tier legal system, one law for the holy people and another for everyone else. Thus, it is written in the Sanhedrin 57a regarding bloodshed. The following distinction applies. If a non-Jew killed another non-Jew or a non-Jew killed a Jew, the killer is liable for execution. If a Jew killed a non-Jew, he is exempt from punishment.
Yes.
Okay.
There's your Noahide laws.
Yes, and that's, you see, that has to do with they believe, you know, we know they're beasts of the field, okay? I'll show you the mimicry. So they, in their pretense of being Israel, they call us the beast of field, and they call us the cattle. And right. the you have the right to do with your cattle as you wish. If you want to starve your cattle to death, you can do that. If you want to beat your cattle, you can beat your cattle. If you want to kill your cattle and eat it, you can do that. You see? So in other words, there is no, that's the whole, this is what this premise is all about. So they're acting like they are men and we are just cattle, so they can do with their cattle as they please. And nobody should have to tell them that they can't. See what I'm saying?
Yeah. All right. Yeah, it's Jewish supremacism. You know, it's Jewish racism, whatever you want to call it. Yet the Jews, because they control the democracy and they control the freedom of ideas or the movement of ideas, nobody realizes that it's the Jews pulling all the strings and that they play by a two-tiered or a double standard.
See, but the funny thing is we as Israelites are the true men, and we know that they're the issues. They're the beasts of the field. It's the very opposite of this. Only we would never treat our cattle like that. You see what I mean? We've always treated our cattle very well, right? We take care of our animals because we understand that our animals feed us. We understand that our animals, deserve to be treated humanely, so to speak.
Exactly.
But they don't treat their animals like that. The beasts of the field prove that they're beasts of the field. Look how the blacks treat their animals. Look how they treat our animals. Look how the Muslims treat their animals or our animals. Look how the Jews treat children, all of them, how they treat children, how they treat their women, et cetera, et cetera. So in other words, they prove that they are the beast of the field, and I have zero guilt in calling them the beast of the field.
Right?
Right. But see, they've turned it around in their pretense of being us, and they call us all the cattle. And they are, you know, superior to us. You understand what I mean? They're taking advantage of that, of what really is, and they're doing a perverted imitation of it, just like, you know, they do with circumcision. That's not the way Yahweh declared circumcision should be done. In their pretense of us, they do circumcision by biting the foreskin off a little boy's penis and sucking the blood. That's right. See, they're pretending they're us, and they're perverting what Yahweh said to do, how to do things.
Right. They don't always bite the foreskin off, but they definitely suck the blood. They'll use the knife sometimes, but there are rabbis, contemptible, no matter what, it's a contemptible practice the way the Jews do it. But yeah, they're sucking the blood off, you know, that's a violation of Yahweh's law. They know it's a violation of Yahweh's law. You're not supposed to ingest blood.
And
they know it.
You're not supposed to be. That's not the way Yahweh told it to be done or anything. See, circumcision was for the Israelite people. And I told you, I believe that the main purpose of it wasn't really cleanliness. It was because we would procreate faster than the other races. That would guarantee that we would have the same. We would be like the sand of the sea or the stars in the sky, the promise to Abraham. And I really believe that's the purpose of it. We'll find out someday from Yahweh. But you notice that ever since they've started circumcising the other races, that they're procreating like rabbits.
Right.
Understand? See, I think the proof is there. Okay?
Okay. So this is Mike King's website, tomatobubble.com, which also is called the Anti-New York Times. And Mike King does a lot of good work in exposing Jewish villainy. He says, under obituary eulogy, farewell incidental, a great man, a true hero of his people and for the world, has just departed for Valhalla. It is said that incidental, 78, died of a heart attack in Germany. Whether the attack was artificially induced by the usual suspects or brought on prematurely due to the years of accumulated stress and abuse that were heaped upon him by the usual suspects makes little difference. All over the Jewish diaspora, you can be sure that the usual suspects are matzel toving and having orgasms over the news of his demise. And yes, they are.
Well, you see how see how more and more articles are beginning to say the truth? You see what I mean? This is my point. That you see, there's so many bullets coming at these Jews right now. See, what used to happen is a person would speak out here and they'd get put down. A person would write a book here, they'd get put down. Ernst Zundel would come out, he'd get put down. Another person comes out, they get put down. But the problem today is that these bullets are coming from practically every article, every blog, it's even starting to show up on like Blacklisted News and other, the bullets are just coming from every angle to where there's so many coming, you can't put it down.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And it eventually seeps through to the last person. They finally get it that the Holocaust is one big fat lie because everybody else around them is saying it. Okay. So it's starting to work. The Jewish empire of deceit is crumbling, and we're watching its demise. This is great to see. It's absolutely great to see. Okay, so he continues. For the editorial board of the New York Times, or the anti-New York Times, word of Zindel's death is particularly poignant for evoking a keen sense of sadness. Zindel, both for his research and his courage, was among the giants whose shoulders we stood upon as a foundation for our own awakening an ongoing education campaign. The story of this dauntless truth warrior is inspirational. For any of yous guys, New Jersey speak for the plural of you, not familiar with the persecution of Ernst Zundel, here is a review, and there's a little box here with a quotation by Ernst. The theater in Auschwitz I was used by the inmates to put on plays and contained a stage and musical instruments. In fact, there were Jews-only orchestras in Auschwitz and other concentration camps. Felderer decided to investigate the large building after an Auschwitz tour guide told him the building was unimportant and was only used by the Germans to put garbage into. Museum officials Piper and Check later confirmed to Felderer that the building was used as a theater during the war. Okay? So anyway, if you go to the Auschwitz tour, you have all these guides who just feed you more Holocaust lies, right? But if you, even David Cole, a Jew, said, no, there were no gas chambers, okay? And that got him in big trouble with Jewry. He had to go underground. He changed his name, and he's been harassed ever since, okay? Never is there any public discussion of whether or not there's any forensic evidence for the Holocaust. Never. And I've been involved. I was involved with Germar Rudolph. We were scheduled to go to Sacramento, California, to do a Holocaust revisionist conference. And Ernst actually shipped all his supplies to Sacramento because he was going to fly. I was going to drive. And what happened was the venue got attacked by the ADL and by other Jews and said, if you allow this conference to go on, no Jew will ever, there's a hotel. No Jew will ever attend this venue ever again. You're just going to go, we're going to put you out of business. So that venue, who had guaranteed to Germar Rudolph that this could never happen to his establishment, did happen to his establishment. And so he had to eat the cost of shipping all his books to Sacramento and then shipping them back again.
But here's what I would say about that, Eli, is that has worked up till now, but sooner or later, people and businesses have to just say, no, we're going to continue and we're going to have this. And, you know, I'll tell you something right now. I bet you the Jews would have went to that hotel after anyway.
Sure.
So we got to stop allowing them to do this. They could try to put them out of business. They could tell all the Freemasons, don't ever go to that hotel. But there's going to be people that are going to go to that hotel anyway. There's more of us than there are of them. You know what I mean? So Right. Their little boycott, they can stick it up there, you know what? But this is something that we've got to overcome. We've got to stop letting them play the bluff card on us, and we've got to start saying, no, I will not apologize. I said what I said. I meant what I said. Why would have I said it in the first place? You're going to want me to come out here in tears and say, I really didn't mean it. I was just depressed at the moment. No, just stick to your guns. The more people that will stick to their guns, sooner or later, everybody will be able to stick to their guns. But the more people that keep backing down and apologizing and doing all these things, it's just going to go the wrong way.
Right. Well, we have a similar situation. There's this divestment movement, which is pretty much organized by the left wing that is divest from the Israeli state. Okay, it's a boycott group that Americans should not buy anything from Israel. And so the Jews have been complaining bitterly about this because they considered such boycotting to be immoral. Yet when they do it to our people and our venues, it's moral. Okay, this is another example of the Jewish double standard.
Yes, but that's because you are the cattle. You are the cattle. They can do with their cattle what they want, but they're men. You, the cattle, can't say, we don't want to buy your products. You're the man. You're the one that feeds us. You're the one that takes care of us.
Right? Well, there's a stampede coming, Jew. There's a stampede coming. All right? In 1977, Zindel founded a house called Samizdat Publishers, which issued such revisionist classics as The Hitler We Loved and Why. did 6 Million Really Die by Richard Verrill? I'm not sure that's the correct name, but anyway, it wasn't written by Ernst. It was written by someone else. Zindel also gained notoriety during the 1970s as a spokesman for concerned parents of German descent, a group which claimed German Canadians were the target of anti-German stereotyping. In 1983, okay, we talked about Sabina Citron earlier, a Holocaust survivor, quote-unquote. He's got TM here. Yeah, only Jews have the trademark on Holocaust survivor. Filed a complaint against Zindel before the Canadian Human Rights Tribunal. The Ontario government joined the proceedings against Zindel, charging him with spreading false news by publishing Did 6 Million Really Die? He underwent two highly publicized criminal trials in 1985 and 1988. The charge against him alleged that he did publish a statement and that likely was likely to cause mischief to the public interest in racial tolerance or intolerance. Now, simply publishing a booklet, is it likely, can you put somebody in jail for publishing a book or handing out leaflets? Because they might cause people to get upset. I mean, nobody was ever hurt. No riots ever ensued for any of the publications that Ernst Zindel put out. Okay? So it is totally a free speech issue. No one was ever hurt. In fact, as we've been pointing out, only left-wingers and Jews committed violent acts. Well, so if you could say it this way, David, publishing Did 6 Million Really Die caused Jews to become violent?
Well, let me ask you this question then. On that same premise, what's good for the goose is good for the gander. How about if, should we allow them to publish movies that show Christians in a very dark light? That would upset a lot of people, wouldn't it? Well, we shouldn't allow them to put out any movies.
Yeah,
we shouldn't allow them to put out any movies like that because they're not showing us in a good light. They've never shown us in a good light in those movies. Yeah. And you say,
they get away with everything.
Right. Well, there should be a law against that if we're going to have a law. See, this comes down to what Tucker Carlson said again, and this is something we should continually use against these Jews. When they talk about hate speech, the first question you want to ask them is, well, then who gets to decide what hate speech is? Because you know what? The Jews never want to answer that question.
Right.
You see, who has decided up till now what hate speech is? The Jews have. We all know that because all you have to do is do the thing that's on Andy's site there, to find out who rules over you, find out who you can't talk about, right?
You can't criticize, yeah.
Mm-hmm. You can criticize anybody but the Jews and their little fable of the Holocaust. So that tells you who decides what hate speech is.
That's right. That's right. But again, the general public, the Democrats of the world, are either asleep or they just don't know that there is a double standard, with Jews being the ones who are always making the rules and the rest of us must follow them. And even though these rules aren't legal, they control the justice system, the so-called justice system. They control the media, etc. So they can put anybody on trial they choose with trumped-up charges and get away with it. Nobody else could ever get away with this.
Well, do you know that the three branches of the government were designed to keep each other in check, not to work together to harm the people, but the legislative, or whichever the three branches, They're there to watch the other branches and keep them in line so that they don't encroach upon the people. Well, the way our legislative branches are working right now is they work together to cheat the people, work together to put the people into bondage, further bondage. In other words, this guy was talking about the fact that we should sue Google, right? And he's right about this. So what do? You go to a court and try to get them to take action against Google, who is the government, is run through the government, Jews and government. So in other words, it's just like going for your parking ticket. When you go to your state, you get a parking ticket, you go see a judge, that judge is working for that state. That's in contrary to what's supposed to be going on. You're supposed to have somebody that is in that judge seat that doesn't work for the state, that is arbitrary, that you can go to and to defend yourself from that state. But see, this judge is on the dole of that state when you go to get your parking ticket taken care of or whatever it is. So it's the same thing. You're going to the state to ask them to forgive you. Well, it's just they don't want to do that.
That's why.
You know what I mean?
Are elected by the people, right? So, because if the people get sick and tired of the judge's bad rulings, they can get rid of them, right? That's the way it's supposed to work. That's the way a republic is supposed to work. But we have the three divisions of government all combined into one Zionist entity these days, and there's no justice possible. And that's what Ernst Zindel found out.
That's what he proved. See, he gave his life for us in that sense, and he proved that the courts are out of balance. Because once you find out the courts are out of balance in Europe, you obviously know that the courts are way out of balance in the UK because of Freemasonry. And then same thing here. It's just worse in Canada and UK than they are in America. They're still very bad here. But in other words, it exposed this fact.
It's honest. That's one thing we could say here in America. But the Jews are trying to corrupt that as we speak.
How do they do that, Eli? See, this is why I expose the fact that these Italians, many like Scaramucci and all these different, when you see names going up for, like people are running for district in your state and everything, now you have to say, well, is this guy a Sicilian, this Italian? There's tons of Italians that run. You see what I mean? And this is what I'm trying to teach people. This is how they're hiding themselves. This is how more Jews are involved in government than you know about.
Yes. And even if they don't realize they're Jewish, they're still part of the Jewish mafia, whether they realize it or not.
And it still runs through their stream, their bloodstream. Scaramucci knows it or not, he is a Jew. He married a Jewess. He acts like a Jew. And he's from Sicily.
Yeah, yeah. He's got Edomite blood flowing in his veins, right?
And Negro, too.
Right. After the trial in 1985, Zindel was found guilty, but his conviction was later overturned in an appeal on a technicality. Well, no, it's because it was unconstitutional. That's a technicality. That led to a second trial in 1988, during which a ton of Holocaust debunking data seeped out to the world, in which he was again convicted. It was not until 1992 that Zindel was finally acquitted upon appeal by the Supreme Court of Canada, which ruled that his conviction was a violation of the guarantee of freedom of expression. So, Zindel had his convictions overturned twice. Does the mass media ever point this out?
So he won twice is what you're saying, and they would not let him win is what they're saying. In other words, remember, I don't know if you saw this a while ago, they had this vote with this Christian minister, supposed Judeo-Christian, during the Democratic Party thing when Obama was being elected, and they took the vote the first time, and the people that didn't want them to help Israel screamed louder than the ones that wanted them to. And they flipped out, you know what I mean? So he said, let's do that again. So in other words, the people had won and claimed that they didn't want to, back up Israel in this certain thing and allow them to infiltrate the party further, the Democratic Party. And so I think they did it two or three times. It's the same thing. So in other words, in their court, in our court, you might win. But now they've got it so that they can keep taking you back so you can lose. They can find another way for and buy more time so you can lose. Well, obviously, you see, he had won And that they shouldn't allow that. That shouldn't be allowed. You, if you win your court case, that's it. You win the court case, as far as I'm concerned. There is no taking it back and being tried again on the same thing, is there?
Right. Well, that's what happened to Ernst in Canada. They tried him twice for the same thing.
Well, you can't do that. That's illegal.
Double jeopardy. Yeah. Well, it's illegal in America, although the ADL gets around that by if they fail in federal court to convict you, they will take you to state court on the same charges. I think that's what they did to who's the guy from Ohio that filed a suit against the IRS and forced them to stop taking people's money.
I know his name. I know his name. Irwin Schiff.
Jim Trafficant.
Oh, Jim Trafficant. Okay.
Right. Okay, and they put Irwin Schiff in jail, too.
Yes, and he's one of theirs. But no, I think it's what they do is they take you to civil. See, you notice how, like, there's a thing, a federal court with against the Clintons or something. Then when they're done with that, somebody takes them to a civil court and tries them on the same thing. You know what I mean?
Right.
Now, which means that's a different than the federal, you know, it's a.
It has to be done by individuals, as in the case of who's the black football player that murdered his wife? O.J. Simpson, right. And so a civil trial has to be initiated by a civilian. You know, right. In this case, it was the family of the wife that he murdered. Okay. And he got away with murder because he had money. He was able to buy the court, right? But he wasn't able to buy the civil jury.
But notice how he doesn't have money anymore, just like every other black superstar. The Jew will drain that money from him one way or another, whether it's through a court system, whether it's through an agent of his, or whatever, or through the gambling casinos, whatever it might be. They always drain these basketball players and everybody, all of them. So these Negroes get paid big bucks. And, like, you know, they could be big boxers, et cetera, et cetera. They always get the money back from them. And they're laughing about it. You know what I mean?
This article continues here. The Leuchter Report, that's another German, banned by Amazon in 2017, will forever be a foundational event in the history of Holohawks debunking. Fred Leuchter, there's a picture of him here, was a gas chamber expert called to testify by Zündel's defense. Although Leuchter believed in the Holohawks at the time, he assured the defense that he would be objective in his research. After visiting Auschwitz and smuggling out remnants of stone from the gas chambers, Leuchter proved that no gassings could have taken place there. His findings were later confirmed by Polish authorities, although they claim that they do not know why the gassings left no forensic trace. And Germar Rudolph reproduced these experiments, which when you have Zyklon B in a room, especially a room with brick and mortar, it leaves a bluish tint in the mortar. Okay? There was no bluish tint in any of this mortar of the so-called gas chambers, which proves that there was no Zyklon B used in those so-called gas chambers.
Was there a green tint or a pink one? It could have been a Hungarian Jew. Don't they leave green?
That's only if you burn them. Okay, but this is just a gas chamber, right?
Yeah.
Where they claimed that the Jews were being gassed. Well, this evidence proves that it never happened, okay? The Zündel trial also elevated the profile of David Irving, who testified for the defense, okay? So when David Irving did this, then the Jews went after David, too. Remember, he got sued by the Jews in Britain, and he won that trial, too. But nevertheless, he wound up going to jail. Okay? So it doesn't matter if you win in court against these people, they will still put you in jail. As so to your point earlier, you might as well not cooperate with Jews ever because they're gonna punish you anyway. Okay?
Well, the judge is a banker. The judge is a banker. And what happens is the lawyers work with him and they extend the case. And they'll keep extending the case. And as long as they can keep extending the case and the more money they draw from the individuals, the judge gets a certain kickback of that.
Yes, yeah.
Okay.
Now, I don't know if I stated, since we had that period where we couldn't get on the air, but Zündel was actually kidnapped from his home in Tennessee where he was living with his wife, Ingrid. Okay. and he was fully qualified to gain American citizenship by having married Ingrid, and that was all in the works. But the government kidnapped him and extradited him to Canada before he could become a U.S. citizen. So this shows you only the Jews have this kind of international clout to extradite a person who's undergoing citizenship, application. Okay, the same thing happened to Germar Rudolph, who was living in America. He was living in Chicago. I was working with him. We put on seminars together for about a year, and then all of a sudden he was extradited. Okay, while they let all of these Mexicans, non-citizens, illegal aliens, and Somalians come into America, who never questioned the holohoax, come in for free.
What about the Maniac? Didn't his lawyer who gave the truth have to go to prison for a year or something? Was it him?
Remember, I'm not sure, but but Jim Traficant defended Demjanjuk as well, so he had two strikes against him by the Jewish community.
Oh, yes, okay. Absolutely.
Yeah, that's why we feel he was murdered also. He died mysteriously in a so-called farm accident.
On his tractor or something, right?
Yeah, his tractor flew over and fell on him, supposedly. Here's an experienced farmer, right?
Yeah.
So we suspect foul play in that case, too, okay? So he was finally extradited to Germany because Canada had enough of trying to convict him. Where in Germany, just denying the Holocaust will get you into prison. But you may be thinking of Zindel's lawyer, a woman.
Oh, it was Zindel's lawyer. She went to jail because she told the truth. Yeah. She gave some truth in the evidence, and they didn't like what she said, and they put her away. I think I was thinking of him, but I thought it was Demjanjuk.
No. But, Zindel's lawyer, lady lawyer, she was put in jail because she tried to defend him.
Okay? With the truth.
She made statements with truth. And she made statements that the German court, I should say the Jewish court, did not like. And therefore, she was put away. So the Jews had it in for Ernst Zindel. I'm surprised he lived as long as he did. Had the Jews actually won a conviction against him, they would have put him away for life. And that would have been the end of it. But that didn't happen because even in Canada, there are justices who, at the upper levels, have said, no, this was a kangaroo court, and we overturned this conviction.
You know why I think it happened? Why he didn't get put away for life? Because Yahweh says so. That's why.
Right. Right.
He's the one that gave him the truth. And he served his sentence, and so therefore he served his purpose. And I don't believe Yahweh wanted him to be put away forever on that. And so he made it that way. That's the way I look at it.
Now Zindel never made any defamatory statements ever. He didn't, he didn't use the N word when speaking of blacks. He didn't call Jews dirty names. It's always the other way around. Okay. Again, the Jews get away with name-calling, but we can't call them names. Otherwise, they'll accuse us of hate speech, right? And they'll write books that all Germans must die, Germany must perish, and that's not considered hate speech. But if you or I say, well, the Jews are really Edomites, and Yahweh has condemned them to death, of course, we're not condemning to death. We're just quoting the Bible, right? So we dare them to take us to court, but we're American citizens.
Do you want to hear? Okay, go ahead.
Yeah, they can't haul us into court and run roughshod as they did these two non-citizens. But over to you.
I wanted to see if you wanted to hear a little background from Wikipedia on Zindel.
Okay.
Zindel was born in Calmbach, now part of Bad Wilbad, in Baden-Württemberg, Germany, and was raised mostly by his mother Gertrude. His father, Fritz, a lumberjack, was drafted into the German army shortly after Ernst's birth and served as a medic on the Eastern Front. He was captured and incarcerated as a prisoner of war and did not return home until 1947, by which time he had become an alcoholic. Ernst was the fourth in a family of six children, consisting of a brother who later became an attorney in the United States and four sisters. See, not every attorney is a Jew. Okay. Mm-hmm. He studied graphic art at trade school, graduating in 1957, and emigrated to Canada in 58 when he was 19 years old to avoid conscription by the German military. In 1960, he married French-Canadian Yannick LaRouche, who he met in a language class in Toronto, and with whom he had sons Pierre and Hans. The couple moved to Montreal in 1961, where Zundel would eventually come under the tutelage of Canadian fascist politician Adrian Arcand. Professionally, Zundel worked as a graphic artist, photographer, photo retoucher, and printer. He got his first job in the art department at Simpson Sears in Toronto before opening his own studio in Montreal. In 69, he moved back to Toronto, where he founded Great Ideas Advertising, a commercial art studio. There's another sin. That's competition for the Jews. On several occasions in the 1960s, he was commissioned to illustrate covers for Maclean's magazine. His controversial views were not well known until the 60s and 70s, since he published his opinions under the pseudonym Christoph Friedrich. I didn't know that. At the time, Christoph Friedrich. I wonder what that means in English.
Yeah.
At the time, he was also an organizer among the immigrants for the Rallyement des Crédits, Quebec's social credit party. This must be that little liberal party. Yeah. Oh, in 68, he joined the Liberal Party of Canada and ran that year's Liberal Leadership Convention under the anglicized name Ernst Zundel as a self-described nuisance candidate. Running on the immigrants' right. Listen to this, though. He's running on the immigrants. Yeah, the immigrant rights platform. He used his candidacy to campaign against anti-German attitudes. He dropped out of the contest prior to the election, but not before delivering his campaign speech to the convention. Zundel gained prominence and respectability during the 70s as a spokesman for concerned parents of German descent, a group that claimed German Canadians and their children were the target of discrimination due to anti-German stereotyping in the media. In the late 70s, Zundel, as the group's spokesman, issued press releases protesting the NBC Holocaust miniseries for its depiction of Germans. Great. He was a doer, right? In the late 70s, reporter Mark Bonikoski unmasked Zundel and ended his career as a credible media spokesperson by revealing that he was publishing neo-Nazi and anti-Jewish pamphlets such as The Hitler We Loved and Why under the pseudonym Christoph Friedrich. Zundel's marriage to LaRouche ended in 77, and his public notoriety grew.
Mm-hmm.
Let me just hit one more thing. In 1994, Zundel campaigned in Canada to ban the movie Schindler's List as hate speech. See, he didn't get to decide what hate speech was because it wasn't banned. You know that, right? But if the Jews wanted that movie banned because Germans made it, right? They would have got that movie banned, wouldn't they?
Sure.
That proves to you, that answers your question.
Yeah, and the Jews tried to ban Passion of the Christ. Try to ban that. A year before it was even released, the ADL was condemning that movie.
But they did get the changes in it that they wanted from Gibson.
Yes.
But right, let me finish. He did get the Schindler's List banned in Malaysia and in Lebanon and Jordan.
Okay, well, those are Muslim countries. That's why.
There's a lot of white people in Lebanon. If you look at Lebanese people, they're very white.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Maybe there's some of Ishmael might be left there. I'm not saying all people there. I'm just saying, you know, you notice how you don't see these people on television so that you can tell if any of Ishmael is left. You know what I mean? Like you don't see, when you see Iran, you see a couple of individuals. How many of Iranians have you really seen? You don't know. You don't know if they're white. They could be a lot of them could be white. You have to go there to actually find out, right?
Well, Iran means Aryan. That's what it means.
But remember what I told you. They helped us over there.
They consider themselves to be an Aryan people.
So they're probably Ishmael. They're probably Ishmael.
They probably are. Yes. Yeah. Okay. Can I get back to this tomato bubble?
Yes, article? I'm sorry.
Are you done?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. Zundel was finally released on March 1st, 2010, but Kami Canada would not allow him to return on grounds that he was a risk to Canada's national security. Yeah, the Jews might create violence. Zundel then returned to his family home in Germany apart from his wife and appealed to the U.S. to allow him to return. In March 2017, the U.S. Department of Homeland Security, run by Jews, ruled Zundel inadmissible because he had served jail time in a foreign country because of the show trials. They thus rejected his effort to be reunited with his wife, Ingrid. Now, Ingrid doesn't dare go to Germany because they would accuse her of doing the same thing, and she'd go to jail. So there's no way Ingrid would dare go back to Germany. Okay, Zundel was persecuted. She may be a naturalized citizen, but Germany might treat her otherwise. Zundel was persecuted for thought crime by three different governments. Yet, even after years of torment, arson attacks, assassination attempts, death threats, drawn-out trials, and the serving of unjust sentences, the usual suspects would not allow him to live out his golden years in peace in America. But his life and death were not in vain. It was Herr Zundel who put Holocaust denial on the map, and the forensic tests which scientifically debunk the lie of Bolshevik are the lasting legacy of his efforts. For that, and for his shining example as a human being, Zundel's truth goes marching on. To quote a line from the movie Gladiator, what he did in life echoes in eternity. Okay?
Did you know that Schindler's List admitted in, I believe it was that movie, that it admitted in the book that this was not, that it was fiction.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Did, I'll see if I can find that sometime. I'll try to find it while you're talking next time. But I'm pretty sure that's the movie that it's admitted right in the beginning of the book that this Schindler's List thing is all fiction.
It's a fiction. Yeah.
But they don't tell you that in the movie.
As a polar hoax. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And here that shows a picture with Joseph Berg, who was a Jew, who his whole life was also denying the reality of the Holocaust. Okay, and Joseph Berg, but he never received any publicity until Ernst Zundel died. I had never even heard of Joseph Berg, which shows how well Joseph Berg's writings have been, memory hold. Okay. Under this picture, it says this: after testifying in defense of Zundel, Jewish researcher and Holocaust survivor and noted writer Joseph Berg was disowned from the Jewish community for stating that there were no gas chambers at Auschwitz. But there was a McDonald's and a Burger King. Yeah. When Berg died, the noble Zundel paid to have him buried at a Catholic cemetery because no Jewish sites would take him.
Yeah, we read that already. And here it says right here, the New York Slimes, it says, to begin with, there is no Schindler's List. The book adds layers of complexity to the Schindler legend.
Right.
And it says an authoritative new biography of Oskar Schindler, the German businessman who saved more than 1,000 Jews from the Nazis, clashes sharply with his idealized, get it?
Mm-hmm.
Portrayal in the Oscar-winning 1993. Yeah, idealized. Yeah. In other words, idealism never translates to reality properly. But there was no Schindler's List. Schindler had almost nothing to do with the list, said David M. Crow. And it said that the whole thing is just fiction. So, I mean, if you read this little article, that it will tell you that. So, in other words, these are just these movies that they put out. And like we said, they'll take stories that really happened to Germans in Danzig and different places and translate those stories to pretend they happened to Jews. The atrocities that we had read about, remember, in Danzig and in Poland?
Right. Yeah, that was German territory that Hitler was trying to get back from that ridiculous Weimar Republic government and the absurd Versailles Treaty, which blamed Germany for everything that the Jews did. So Hitler had every right to reclaim the Danzig Quarter, every right. In fact, there was no Poland before the Versailles Treaty.
That's correct. That's correct. It was called the, I'm trying to think of what it was called, the Austrian-Hungarian Empire, I believe it was called.
Yeah. And so the Versailles Treaty, which was every nation had a Jew advisor for their representative. You know, America had, of course, Woodrow Wilson, and his Jewish advisor was Colonel House. Okay. France had their president, and he had a Jewish advisor. Britain had a Jewish advisor for their delegacy. You know, and then the Jews themselves, they had a Zionist delegation, even though there was no Jewish state. So the Jews were overly represented at the Versailles Treaty, and because they wanted to make sure that they wanted to punish Germany for something that Germany was not guilty of, namely World War One. And then they punished the Germans again for something they're not guilty of, namely the Holocaust.
Yes.
Right? So what the Jews have done to Germany and to the German people, talking about execution, talk about Holocaust, the firebombing of Dresden and Berlin and all these other German cities, that was the real Holocaust, folks. So the Jews had to invent a Holocaust to cover their tracks as a smokescreen for what they have done to the German people.
See, this is exactly what I said, why the reason for the, and this was what makes sense to me. You see, during World War One, before the Versailles Treaty, they had done the Bolshevik Revolution, they had done the Armenian thing, and while people were watching World War One, so they got their revenge on the Tsar, they waited 102 years to get that. But, you know, what they did to the Germans after the war, they knew that now there's three major, you know, genocides that they have committed right there. And so that they had to make a fable and get it out there first in order to make them the victims. So that if you said, well, look what they did to the Germans after the war. Well, I don't see anything wrong with that. That's just payback for what the Germans did to them by killing 6 million. See what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Because they knew if they didn't come up with some kind of a story and the people of the world found out, there would have been a Jew hunt then. If they found out, if the people knew about the what happened to the Tsar in Russia and what happened to the Armenian genocide and everything like that, never mind the Germans, that would have cooked them. They would have been, you know, so they had to come up with something in order, you know, then you could have found out that they did the French Revolution as well, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, as far as I'm concerned, they love to blame the Catholics and Christianity for the, what do they call that, the Inquisition. But I believe that that were Jew Jesuits. I don't believe that was the Catholics at all. So that
was a Jew.
Yeah. I mean, who else would do that? Probably the witch hunts, too. Whatever happened with the witches there, right. That was probably them, too. I wouldn't doubt it for a second. And as a matter of fact, who could be that cruel but them?
Yeah, exactly. They have no conscience because whatever conscience they have is that of Lucifer, their father.
Listen to this little tidbit. After the war, Schindler was a failure. He squandered money given to him by the American Jewish Joint Distribution Committee and moved to Argentina, where he attempted to breed nutria. He then returned to Germany and bought a concrete factory where workers attacked him for saving the Jews during the war, praise Yahweh. The factory went bankrupt, praise Yahweh. Schindler continued drinking and begged the Jews he had saved to help him financially. He died from alcoholism and heavy smoking, Mr. Crow said. Now, there's some justice right there. You see, he built a concrete factory. Why do you think he did that? Because there was a lot of money to be made rebuilding Germany, and that would be competition to the Jews. So they're not going to allow him to have a concrete factory and make all that money when they can own the concrete factories. That's the purpose of war. You put people to war so you can kill Whitey, so you can destroy all the buildings of like they did in Germany and all over Europe. Who do you think is going to get all the contracts to rebuild all those buildings and own the buildings and own the land at cheap prices? They're not going to let some German own a concrete factory and make all that money. No way.
Yeah, yeah. I would say Germany was the most devastated country of World War II. Absolutely no doubt about it.
I agree.
Okay. And no respect is given to the German people for what they endure. None whatsoever. And that's not even including the gang rapes ordered by Stalin and the Jewish Bolsheviks against white women as the war proceeded and as the Stalin's Lend-Lease Army, supported by federal dictator Roosevelt, made it possible for Stalin's army to make war against the Germans, okay? So because FDR was a Jew puppet, just like Stalin was. So the truth about the Jews and warfare has yet to come out, okay? This is why, with a few minutes left, let me just say this. 9/11 was a huge gamble taken by the Jews, a huge, huge gamble. They knew they got away with the assassination of President Kennedy, and they figured, well, since the American people didn't rise up for the assassination of Kennedy, well, we can get away with it again, and we'll stage 9/11, blame it on the Arabs, and we'll just take over more of the government, which they did. But the impossibility of that being a an exercise by Arabs with box cutters was so obvious that they couldn't cover up, the scientific facts, just like the Holocaust. They can't cover up the scientific facts. So by instituting 9/11, they opened up criticism to themselves, because there's a Jew under every rock when you turn over the details of 9/11. And now people understanding that 9/11 was a Jewish operation makes the Holocaust more credible as a Jewish operation, which it is.
The beginning of Pike's War was started in 1993 when they tried to blow up that building in New York. Okay, that was attempt number one.
Pike's World War III. Yeah.
Okay. That backfired in their face. Then they pulled off 9/11. Yes. Now there's your beginning of Pike's War, because now we could go into the Middle East and as Netanyahu and his buddy had said, they were going to restructure the whole Middle East. They've made this decision themselves. They didn't ask the world, or they didn't ask the Middle East. They're going to restructure the Middle East. So in other words, it's like I told you, now the immigration is the next phase of the war, getting the people out of the Middle East so that they can restructure the Middle East.
Yes, yes. Yeah, as I call his prophecy, the three world wars, the first one would be to overthrow the monarchies, which happened, okay? And the second one, and institute communism. The second one would be to pit Christianity against communism, and the third war would be to pit the white race against Islam, and that's what's happening now.
Yeah, I really should say that when Reagan took down the Cold War thing, that was the beginning, because we brought in the next phase, which is the first phase of all phases, is the war on terrorism. So in other words, this is a faceless enemy that you don't know who it is. It could be anybody.
Right. So it's the Jew.
Yeah, so that's actually the very first phase. But, there you have it. So we're really just about out of time here. If you've got a final comment, go right ahead, sir.
Well, I would say, What we're doing is we're watching the unraveling of the Jewish empire of deceit, with all of the lies that they have foisted upon not just Germany and America, but the entire world, unraveling before our very eyes. The Jews are scrambling to patch their dike. Okay? They're sticking their thumb and their fingers in the holes of the dike, but the dike, it's cracking. And the weight of all that water behind the wall, which is called truth, is crumbling that dam, that dike. And there's nothing the Jews can do about it. The attempts to smear Trump are just part of the attempt. And that's failing, too. It's all going to blow up in their faces.
Guess what? Water. We are the children of the water. We're born of water and spirit. Right. And that we are the children of truth. Okay, and that's what's breaking the dam down. The last thought I'd say before I hit the music, ladies and gentlemen, are beware of the fables of the Jews. Oh.
King.